Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in to episode 2 of the Realty Growth Report. Today's guest speaker, Dylan Carty. Dylan, how are you doing?
Good. Good. I like your radio voice.
Thanks. I've been trying to perfect it for a long time.
Yeah, I bet.
No, that's not true. It's not true. So, Dylan, you work with a little bit different part of RGI. Could you tell us a little about what you do at RGI?
Yeah, so first I'll go into my background a little bit because I think that's what led me along this path. I grew up with the family owning multifamily property. So
lucky.
I always remember going over and mowing the lawns and watching dad collect rent. I remember on like a Friday at one point seeing my dad having like $1,200 cash in his pocket and thinking it was the coolest thing at the time. So I kind of started seeing that side of the business. When I came over to Rochester, joined Realty Growth, I was doing everything, still do everything, but I've quickly kind of developed a niche in multifamily. It's kind of my thing. I like it. I'm knowledgeable about it. It's fun. It's, in my opinion, the safest investment you can buy. Mm-hmm. So with that, two years ago, I started a management company. It's kind of a sister company to Realty Growth. And we manage apartments and commercial buildings in Rochester.
Nice. And that shares the name.
Yeah, so yeah. Realty Growth Management. Pretty simple. Nice. All the same fun people.
Cool.
Same fun colors.
We do have a good team, don't we? So one thing I heard you say was you think multifamily is the best type of investment, or it's the safest. Can you elaborate on that a little bit for our audience?
Yeah, and I'm far from, you know, the most educated investor in the world, but my opinion has came from long-term stability of multifamily and just watching it from the outside in. Everyone's always going to need a home. I think B-class, like me, for investing, B-class is the focus right now. Mm-hmm. Any apartments that are under $900 a month, you can rent them quicker than you can say rent them. There's a word I'm looking for. And it's not like, you know, with commercial real estate, there's the big, oh my God, my tenant's going to lose and I'm losing so much money. With multifamily, you can have a vacancy and it's not gonna destroy your investment.
You got
enough money left over.
You can cover it, right?
It's more
there's a specific term you're looking for?
Yeah, but I'm not gonna get it because
when it's empty.
I'm lowly educated. It's just more practical to me. I don't know. If I was to go out and I had $1 million to spend and I was like, oh man, I'd really love to buy that building with Arby's in it, mm-hmm. or I'd love to buy that building with 30 apartments in it, a lot of people would say, oh my God, Arby's just sounds way easier. You don't have to do anything, which is true.
Yeah.
But that building also, I feel like, is so much harder to fill. If anything goes wrong with Arby's,
mm-hmm.
you're in trouble. You can't raise Arby's rent every year. So I just, from my perspective, multifamily just feels safer.
A little more consistent.
Yeah.
A little more even.
You have a little more control.
In a way.
You have a little more control, and it's much easier to get into than a commercial property.
Okay. Okay.
Much easier.
So I'm thinking about renting out my home.
Mm-hmm.
So because I'm doing I'm in my first 5 years of my career, I don't exactly have large, you know, amounts of capital where I can just buy my rentals and investments. So right now my strategy is I'm living in my first rental now, which is my first home.
Burr that.
Rent it. And then move into my next property with a, you know, minimal down payment.
Yeah.
Because you can get that live-in financing. So that's kind of my strategy right now. So one thing I'm wondering, and I think maybe some of the audience is wondering too, how do you I'm looking to get my first tenants. How do you go about qualifying a tenant?
So like for
multifamily,
a guy like you, there's a perfect, you shut the TV off.
Damn. Oh man. What are you doing? There we go.
For a guy like you, the perfect first step would be go to a website called Rental History Reports. Rental History Reports does not require you to have like a large number of units or anything like that. A guy mm-hmm. like you can do it. The report is $45. You pass that off to the tenant, and it checks everything. It's a national crime check, rental history. So anything that any other landlords or anything they have, it checks with that.
Yeah.
I would obviously also still call the landlord yourself if you get their contact information. But do as much due diligence as you can. I'm not afraid to say it, that I have now started doing a little bit of Facebook digging even. Sounds weird, but
yeah,
a lot of our listings are on Facebook, so these people are inquiring through Facebook.
Through the platform,
yeah, sure. So you see their profile, right? So, you know, hopefully they're smart enough not to have crazy things. Maybe a video of them trashing their previous apartment on there would be like
or some kind of some paraphernalia of some kind.
It may be like a red flag, right? Yeah, you'd be like, oh, that might be things. That might be an issue, but it's easier than you think. Like for any of my personal rentals that I own, I require 2.5 months of the rent, so their income has to be 2.5 times what the rent amount is.
Okay.
Figuring they have other expenses, things like that.
Gotcha. So that report you were talking about, does that include a credit report too?
Yes.
In there?
Yes.
Too?
So it gives them a rating like between A and F.
Really?
Yeah. And like set up criteria at the beginning, but like for some of our management companies or properties, the criteria is different. So some of them will require a higher credit score than others. Mm-hmm. So just set what you're going to be okay with and it'll run it for you and it'll tell you whether your tenant's an A or an F.
Okay. That sounds like such a good tool.
Oh yeah.
It sounds like it's a lot of stuff in one.
Yeah. And
like
then nice the package. One thing I will say that I'm big on is don't shy away if someone necessarily has bad credit, because I had bad credit when I was renting, but make sure you maybe get a cosigner or an additional deposit or something like that. But you know, there's a lot of young people coming out of college, things like that, and they don't have a lot of credit. It's not that they would be a bad renter. The credit just isn't there yet.
Got it.
So that's a big thing that I always try to go a little further if I can, especially if I think they'd be a great tenant for the property.
Cool. Wow, that helps me a lot. That was awesome.
You should. You don't have any kids, right?
No.
Dude, you should just live in a bedroom and rent out the other bedrooms.
I don't know if my wife would dig it. I am married.
Yeah.
And I do have a dog, too. Yeah, that's a big deal. I like that idea. I think that's a good idea for a lot of single guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Maybe gals, too.
Without wives.
Other gals.
Yeah. See, I'm newly married, so I don't know yet. I don't usually run those things by my wife.
Maybe. Oh, yeah. That's a good idea.
Maybe that's something I could take and learn from this podcast.
Yeah. So I've been talking to my younger brother, who's just going to be finishing up a master's degree, and he's going to be a teacher, and his starting salary is only going to be like 40-something. But kind of what I was talking about with him was, from my understanding, I'm not a lender, so don't take this as like legal advice or lending advice or anything. But what we kind of talked about was the same thing I kind of talked about, which was he should be able to get in something small like a condo and own it for like 5% down. So now you're talking like single, you know, like a 5-digit down payment.
Right. Yep.
Or sorry, a 4-digit down payment, depending on where he's going to be. Renovate the thing. Get a signed lease agreement on that. And then if he upgrades to like a small home or like a duplex or a triplex or something, my understanding is the bank gets it. They're like, oh, he's just upgrading, so it's okay. We can give him a second mortgage and he'll qualify for it because his debt to income is going to be good because he's going to have that signed lease agreement, depending on your lender. Does that sound?
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, so when I first started investing personally, I did something similar. The first property I bought was a single family home, really rough shape. Fixed it up while I was living in it. And like, I could tell you right now, I probably wouldn't have my wife. There's no way she would have been on board.
She'd have been down for that.
There's no way she would have been on board for what I was living like back then. And fixed it up, took a second on it, refinanced it because my value had went way up. Mm-hmm. You're talking, there's easy access to equity that people don't understand. You know, the market alone, in a market like Rochester, you're building equity just holding a property if you got it right.
Yeah. So you take equity line of credit.
Took equity line of credit out, refinanced the house, did a cash out refinance. Rates were still low. Was able to get enough cash out where I went and bought a second property. I bought a duplex. Here's the weird part is I never lived in that duplex, and then I moved out of the single family home to rent it. And I went and lived in a bedroom with my dog, and today she's my wife, but my girlfriend at the time, we rented a bedroom and a house for $250 a month.
Wow.
Because it made more sense financially for us to do that and rent the other three units essentially out.
That's willing to hustle. Like you own two properties.
At the time,
three
I
units,
didn't care.
And you're renting a bedroom.
Yeah, everyone like thought it was so stupid. Everyone would be like, what? You don't live in your own house? And I'm like, what do I need a 4-bedroom, 2-bath house
need it.
For?
Yeah.
Yeah, like it just doesn't make sense for me to live in that.
Didn't need it. Wow. Yeah. So since that time, grown, Have you, do you personally own any commercial properties now, or are you staying in that four units and below
No, area? So, yeah, I am. I'm moving up. So I have a 12-unit in North Rochester that would be considered commercial property. I'm still trying to decide if, like, if the long-term route right now with how low rates are is to stay four units or under, mm-hmm. or if you just go. I'm a big believer in the more units under one roof, the better you are. Like, properties need maintenance, and maintenance is expensive. Mm-hmm. And the more units you can fit under one roof, I just feel like the better you're going to be long term.
Because then there's only one roof.
There's only one roof
to replace. You know, there's I get
there's
that.
Only one time to replace all the siding. You know, usually there's only one boiler, things like that.
I get that. What was it like going from, you know, your first your smaller units to your first commercial property? What was that step like?
I think
that like?
The hardest thing, the step was is fairly simple. I bought that duplex 5 years ago now or 4 years ago, so I've grown a lot of equity. So the ability was there to get into a much bigger property just with the equity. I sold that duplex that I bought that I'm telling you about 5 years ago mm-hmm. and rolled the cash into this property. I think the biggest surprise for me was just the overall added expenses of a much larger property that kind of hit me in the face. And mm-hmm. I know it in the business all the time. I see it.
Right.
But when you go from paying $2,000 a year in taxes to $12,000 a year in taxes, you start to think, holy smokes, everything is much more expensive now.
Bigger
yes,
numbers,
you're,
yeah.
You're getting more rent. But before I was thinking, what's the worst that's going to happen if all the tenants moved out of my duplex? Mm-hmm. I got to float a $700 a month mortgage payment. Like, pfft, big deal, right? It's going to be rough, but I can figure it out.
Yep.
Now, if you lose everyone, you know, then you got to float a $4,000 a month mortgage payment, and there's just everything is escalated.
Yeah.
You see yourself spending a lot more time. I've been over there almost every weekend putting in new flooring and things like that because you're just afraid on whether you can afford to hire somebody or not. You don't know yet. It's still new. We just bought this in October, so
yeah,
there's still learning to go. But
cool. When would you recommend, if someone's a new investor just getting started, when would you recommend someone hire your services? Like, when is it a good time to say, okay, I think I need a management company, or I think it would be beneficial to, for me to get a management company?
I would say as soon as you realize your time is valuable, that's when I would do it. Because it is way cheaper than you think it is to hire a management company. You know, I don't manage a lot of single family homes, and we try and shy away from them. But I know there's tons of other companies and ourselves. We do manage a couple, and we manage them for like between $60 and $75 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And
what is that? $75 a month? That doesn't sound like much.
Yeah, it's not a whole lot at all. It's not a whole lot at all.
Yeah.
So we would do everything. Well, a
single family.
Okay. Right. Obviously, the price goes up the more units you have. For example, like a 12 unit. You know, usually we're managing that between $50 and $60, $65 a door. So obviously sure. the price goes up, but your rent goes way up. Still, figure that cost out. What is that on? That's $600 maybe or something like that a month.
And is that's obviously subject to change with the market and like...
Yeah, maybe. Like if you're a difficult client to deal with. You know, for you, Tanner, the price probably doubles.
Right off. Oh, yeah.
No, but the things they do, I'm like my dad, for example, we started managing some of his properties.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, why did I not do this sooner? They pay my mortgage. They pay all the bills. I basically get a check at the end of the month, and I get a very clear report on what's been going on.
Yep. Well, I feel like a lot of the investors that I'm exposed to and I work with, and like I even think of myself and like you for an example, a lot of them have like you have your A stream of income.
Yeah.
And that usually that's not your rentals. You're doing your rentals
in
addition to that, right? So what you're saying is, you know, makes a lot of sense. Because if you're your hustle, your main source of income that you bought these properties with is your regular job.
Right.
How much is that worth to you to put that time you would have spent managing into your, you know, pipeline A?
5 p.m. to 9 p.m. at night, what is that time worth? Because if you owned, you know, a property that needed maintenance and needed love and you were placing tenants and things like that, that time's going to go away. You know, just like my weekends are right now, they go away.
Right.
So you have to be prepared for that. But I would also say, if you are going to buy your first property and it's a duplex, don't hire a management company. And it's weird coming from a guy who owns a management company, but learn the business enough to where you hate managing it. And you see the value in a management company, because then it'll be much easier.
That's a good perspective.
And you want to make sure you're not getting BS'd by, you know, the management company you're going to go hire either. So you don't, you want to know what you're talking about a little bit.
Right.
And realistically, the amount of work, if you place good tenants and your property's in pretty good condition, the amount of work you really have to do on a duplex is minimal.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There's two reasons people buy property, investment property, in my opinion. And it's either for tax reasons or it's long-term investment. You're not going to make a killing today. I don't make anything really off.
It's a long game.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking long time down the road by the time it starts paying off. So is it really worth spending all your time on it? No. But learn it. Learn it first and then do it.
I like that. That's awesome. Awesome advice. I'm going to take that into practice, I think, in the next year.
You're not going to buy more if it doesn't work. That's what I've always said. If I sold you a property and it was the worst investment you ever bought, what are the odds of you buying another one? Pretty slim, right? Pretty slim. So yeah. I want to see it work for you and save as much money as you can because I want much more than two units. You know, I want you to grow as a customer who ends up
buying. You're invested.
Yeah, in I want to see you buy 100 units, you know, because that's better for me and you.
Yep, I like that. That's a good perspective too. Yeah. I'm going to switch our gears just a little bit right now. So you've got kind of your finger on the pulse of the multifamily market here in Southeast Minnesota. What are some trends you're seeing? What is, you know, maybe a bold prediction for 2020?
My bold prediction for 2020, and maybe it's not 2020. This is what I'm going to be curious to see. But 2019 was a struggle to find multifamily deals in Rochester. Some of the smaller surrounding markets, you can see a little bit more opportunity. But what I'm thinking is going to start happening in the next couple of years is I'm thinking that the baby boomers who are investing in property so long ago are either making the decision whether it's time for their family to take over or it's time for them to sell. So I'm thinking that we're going to see more multifamily opportunity in 2020 and 2021.
They're
going to
be coming up.
A lot of these owners that I've done the research are at that point where they either A, need a management company, B, they need to sell, or C, they got to give it to their kids and their kids got to decide what they're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I'm hoping for 2020 is we see some more opportunity because it's been a very tough market.
Yeah. I could see that happening, and I feel like it's going to be spread out, too. It's not going to be like all of a sudden
everybody
at once, but it's going to be more buying opportunities that hopefully start coming up now, because what's the average age of a baby boomer right now?
I don't know.
I'm not sure what it is.
When is the baby boomer? My dad would kill me for, I think my dad's baby boomer.
Probably late.
So late 60s, early 70s maybe is when they were born.
Which is like, they're in retirement age.
Yeah, they're probably in their 60s.
Yep, I saw a statistic where most baby boomers own a business. Like the majority of baby boomers own and operate a business, and I think some of that's real estate.
Yeah.
So they were a very, entrepreneurial generation, you know? So I think there's definitely going to be an opportunity to pass the torch there for sure.
Yeah.
There's going to be some torch passing going on.
And we're seeing it in our business, right?
We
start dealing with people's kids, you know, and they're a little interested in the business. So I think that's cool. I think that's what I am. You know, I'm somebody's kid who got interested in the business. So I love seeing that. I think 2020 is gonna bring some more opportunity for our clients. I'm hoping, but if it doesn't, maybe 2021.
Yeah, it has to come at some point.
Keep saying the same thing. Maybe next year. I actually had people mad at me after I bought that property.
Oh, yeah.
There's not enough deals out there, Dylan. You're supposed to sell them, not buy them. You know, so you get a little bit of remorse.
Yep. Cool. Well, I think that's a good episode two. So thank you guys for tuning in and watching the Realty Growth Report number two, second ever. Thank you, Dylan Carty, for coming on. We're going to have more guests, more people coming. Tune in and watch. It's exciting stuff happening in Southeast Minnesota.
Thanks,
thank you, guys. We're out.